Welcome back. This is Source from the Sofa. This is Rome. We also have Aaron and Jason in the studio tonight. We just watched what I can only deem a pretty ugly football game for Thursday Night Football, but what do we expect, right? It's the 2-1-2 teams. Someone had to come out on top. Cowboys inch out a little 2015 victory. Aaron had the over on Twitter. Thought that was pretty crazy. It was definitely really under, but in my opinion, it was a pretty ugly football game. What did you guys say?
Yeah, Rome, like you mentioned, we did have the over. Anytime you get 7 field goals and a missed 8, you're going to get the under more times than not. Ugly football game, but if you're a Cowboys, you got the win. Divisional game on the road, that's always a good win, regardless of how it looks. Run defense had been a big thing coming in for Dallas. They'd looked terrible the last 2 weeks. Showed up today, Giants averaging less than 2 yards per carry on the ground. CeeDee Lamb wasn't happy about his performance and his lack of getting touches. Dallas fed him a lot, got a touchdown. So Dallas got the win. Run defense looked better, got their star CeeDee involved. Something to look forward to going into week 5 with 10 days off. They do have some injuries along that defensive line. Parsons getting hurt late. So we'll see how that goes.
A couple things, as you've seen, you know, into week 4 now in this season, generally Thursday night games tend to be underwhelming as the season moves on with teams going on short rest, don't have as much in the playbook and preparation for those games. You tend to see some underperformance offensively. And then overall, I think offensively this year in the NFL, we've seen a pretty steep decline of, you know, passing touchdowns and, you know, tons of field goal games. So when you think of a score of 15, we've had a couple of these this year where it's like 5-6 field goals for a team is all they're generating offensively. So Aaron mentioned it, the Dallas defensive line stepping up. Devin Singletary couldn't really get much going on the ground. They got him 14 carries, but only mustered 24 yards on the game. For all you fantasy people on there that own Singletary, wasn't getting the breakout game that had been the last couple of weeks, where it was kind of a surprising RB1, RB2 start in the fantasy-wise. So, but we get these Thursday night ugly games. That's what you get when you don't get that much preparation, but a good bounce back win for Dallas, as I know the fan base, you know, beginning to panic here early in the season where they're not getting off to that hot September start as they commonly do.
Yeah. So I caught the game at a local bar here at Aces. Lots of Giants fans in the New York bar. They were pretty enthusiastic. It was packed, man. It was a good 100 people in like a only 70 seat, you know, dive bar. And they seemed really excited. And then slowly that excitement dissipated. If you went on Twitter as well, they were pretty excited thinking that they're going to have a victory. But when you have like these Thursday night games, I usually like to go with the more experienced quarterback or the more experienced coach. And Dallas definitely had that for tonight. But to be honest with you, I thought Daniel Jones actually looked pretty decent. I think he did throw for 40 times. He had an interception. They got the ball moving. They just couldn't get anything past that like 40, 30 yard marker. And they end up kicking it, what, 5 field goals? They just couldn't get it in, you know, so to speak. So that was kind of frustrating. And then Dak Prescott, 22 for 27 for 221 and 2 touchdowns, but it was all dink and dunk. It was just all 5 yard pass plays. I don't know. It just wasn't very exciting. I did not enjoy watching that game.
Yeah, like Jason mentioned, we got a very vanilla playbook. Short week, divisional game, people know each other. Dallas kept it simple. Short passes, like you said, focus all week was on the run defense. Obviously, that was a big part of their game plan. Giants tried running it up in there, just couldn't get it going. And Daniel Jones, the same, just a lot of short passes to neighbors. I think he had 12 catches for 120-something yards. Ended the game late with a concussion, so we'll have to monitor that going into the next week. Daniel Jones, you said he looked good, okay. I mean, he looked okay. He missed a ton of deep guys that were open. He's just underthrowing the deep ball. That's kind of the knock on him. He doesn't have the big arm. Mobility's decent. Didn't turn the ball over. He gave him a fighter's chance, and that's what you ask for in your quarterback. Keep him in the game, but in the end, he just couldn't make enough plays.
Yeah. We'll see, man. That was ugly. We'll see how the rest of the season goes, but there's 9 games, yeah?
Yep.
Cool. Should we move on? Let's go. Should we just go on to the Lions?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. So I love doing this. We get to make some gambling picks. By the way, If you guys are not following us already, check us out on Dub Club, on X, and Instagram. We've probably got some short videos on Instagram as well as on YouTube and TikTok. Look for Sources in the Sofa or Sources from the Sofa. Pod is the handle for some of them. Otherwise, the Sources FT Sofa. And check us out. Some fun stuff on there about Caitlin Clark as well as a little mischief football. So we'll get some more clips on there in the coming weeks. Week four, this is the last full week of every team playing before we have bye weeks. So it's pretty exciting. I guess I'm just going to go top it down. Yeah. Falcons Saints. It's a favorite by 2.5. Over under is 42.
Yeah, it's a big game for Atlanta back at home. Divisional game 1-2. They've dropped their first two home games to start the season. Saints coming off that late collapse at home against Philadelphia in which they had the lead late. Eagles got the field goal. Falcons 2.5-point favorite. I like them to come back and get this bounce back win. They need it. Can't afford to lose three games to start the season at home. So I'm taking the Falcons on Sunday.
Yeah, no, disagree with me on that. The line, I think, opened up at 1.5 for the minus 1.5 on the Falcons, now to minus 2.5. Still think the Falcons are the bet on this game. Saints coming back to earth a little bit after a really hot start, but Falcons got to have this, as Aaron said. Division winner projected of where this team should be. Need to start getting some things clicking offensively. They're going to get my man Kyle Pitts involved at some point. But I saw Bijan was on the injured list, I think. I don't know if he's questionable or just limited practice, but still pretty good backup in Tyler Allgeier. But Falcons, agree with Aaron on this one.
This is a stay away from me. I just don't know what to expect. Saints didn't look that great in the last game. Falcons looked okay in the last one, but I'm expecting the shootout that I didn't get last week with the Saints. I'm going to stay away from it. But next game, Colts versus Steelers. Steelers are minus 1.5. Small favorite in the money line, minus 125. Over under at 40. Now, I'm a big Steelers fan. You know, no surprise there. But this game makes me really fucking worried. These are the kind of games that we let go. You know, you got the quarterback really dynamic on the Colts. This is a matter of like how good is the Steelers defense. This will answer for me like how good we are, like how legitimate we are for the rest of the season. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it's an interesting game for the Steelers. I think, Rome, you mentioned that you're worried about this game. I think every game the Steelers you go into, you're worried about what their offense is going to produce. Defensively, I think they're going to be great. Like you said, you get a young quarterback. We know he's prone to make mistakes, Richardson. Can they stop Jonathan Taylor in that run game? The Steelers have been really stout against the run. Colts had a good week last week stopping the Bears on the run, but on the running game, but we know Chicago can't run. Steelers going to pound the ball. Fields late. Can he get the job done? I think this comes down to a kicking game. It's been the theme for a lot of these teams. Boswell looks like a trap game. I like the Steelers to come back and go to 4-0.
Cool.
Rome really liked that one. We know Arthur Smith offensively is just going to run the ball all day. So you got Najee, you got Warren, even going to use Fields in the run game. This has got all the trappings of like a 20-18 type game where both teams are going to run the ball. Richardson, definitely dynamic. There's going to be one or two big plays he's going to have. My observations within that Bears game where he's at, like he's also missing a lot of wide open throws that really could have broken the Colts out. And it didn't need to be as close with the Bears as it was, because there were some really open throws that Richardson should have had that should have been more routine to take them away. So I'd stay away from this one too. But I think the Steelers controlling the ball on the ground, you have awesome offensive coordinators like Arthur Smith are really going, attacking the running game, controlling the game, you know, winning it in the trenches. And I think that's where the Steelers have been successful. Rome's coming on every week talking about Justin Fields, but they haven't asked him to do too much. All right. He's playing off the run game, and that's where he's most successful and hasn't turned the ball over. But if I had to go in this one, I'd pick the Steelers, but I think it's going to be close within that three, because they're going to be a battle of field goals.
Yeah. Oh, no. Just Steelers already 3-0. I don't know, but that's definitely a pick 'em. Texans at Jaguars. Jaguars got demolished this past week. 6.5 is pretty generous, I think, over under 45.5. This is a clear cut for us. It's the Texans all the way. Jaguars dead on arrival.
Texans win, but up at -6 right now. Quite a lot of points for a Jaguars team that really needs this win. Trevor Lawrence needs to put together a performance. A team that's picked to go to the playoffs and many accounts for the Jaguars need to put a game together. Texans, to me, still have the advantage, but 6 is a lot of points, Aaron. I don't know. What do you think on that?
6 is a lot of points, but what we've seen from Jacksonville, they're probably the most disappointing team to start the season. We had high expectations coming in. They've laid an egg in every which way. They look lost on offense. They look lost on defense. Texans were embarrassed last week in Minnesota. I think there's a big bounce back spot here for the Texans. I would lay the 6. Wouldn't be in my top plays, but I would take the Texans laying 6 points at home.
I might have to lean that way as well. Packers versus Vikings. Vikings +3, over under 44. Packers slight favorite, obviously. This is another tough game. There's some tough games this week. Darnold, everyone's saying he's the MVP leading candidate, which is mind-boggling at this point, but he's been playing solid. Vikings look really good. Divisional game. Is Willis playing? I know Love, I think he's seen first team snaps so far this week. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, is Love healthy enough to play? We don't know. Willis has shown that he can play well, but Flores' defense has just been giving fits to everybody. We've seen that. Nobody's been able to figure out Minnesota right now. I think the key to beating Minnesota, you got to jump out on them early, but you got to get a run game going. Packers, do you have that with Josh Jacobs and the versatility that Malik Willis can bring in the run game and throw game for the Packers? Matt LaFleur's got him playing well. Packers defense, we haven't been talking about that. You know, we were talking about Josh Jacobs running the ball and Malik Willis throwing. This is a stay-away game for me. Darnold and the Vikings, this is their first true road test to start the season. They had the opener, the Giants. That was a mismatch to begin with. But, yeah, this is a stay-away. I'm going with the Packers to win, but I'm not confident in that pick.
Ooh. Yeah,
hey, what do you got?
It's got all the makings of if Love doesn't play, the Vikings, you know, crush the Texans, surprising win against the Niners, but it's got all those feelings of a letdown game and then a shocking, like, Packers win. It's just like, this is what it feels like going in. I think no rationale behind that, but jumping out to a 4-0 start just seems super unlikely. Love, they were considering him playing last week. I think that was a lot of smoke and mirrors and stuff from a preparation standpoint. But if he didn't play last week and they're even talking about it, the feeling I'm getting is he's probably playing this week because we are getting ready for this division game. And I'd stay away from it, but I'm going to lead Packers in this game.
Well, man, looks like we're all kind of equal on this stay away. I don't know. LaFleur has been doing like a great game plan around Willis. The new D coordinator at, you know, with Green Bay has been doing a great job. They got a run. Vikings, same thing as well, right? They're killing it. So I want to say Vikings coming on top, but I'm definitely staying away from this. Tough games this week. Panthers versus Bengals. Bengals are favorites, 4.5, over under 47. We all saw Bengals. They're 0-3. Maybe they could have won the last game. I'm not really sure. Burrow looks good. Offense looks good. They just can't stop anybody all of a sudden. Their defense looks pretty porous. Washington beat the shit out of them pretty handily. Daniels didn't look like a rookie quarterback so far, leading the rookie of the year race. What you guys got?
This is a classic, what we saw from Dallas last week to this week. Defense looks terrible. They turn it around. Carolina, everybody giving up on them. They go into Las Vegas, blow out the Raiders. Everybody's high on Andy Dalton. The Red Rifle, home game, Bengals, everybody's down on them, 0-3. Joe Burrow after the game, private conversation with Coach Zach Taylor. Bengals are going to come out fired up. Last time they went on a big road game last year when everybody was counting them out was at Arizona. They went on and won that game big. Ja'Marr Chase, that connection with Burrow's good. T. Higgins back. Bengals win. Bengals cover in Carolina.
With Aaron, this is a must win for the Bengals. They got nothing to hold back in this. They have to have this game. They're going to have a tough week following. They got the Ravens next week on deck, who are also scrounging for a win. Bengals have to have this game. They're emptying it out. Panthers come back to earth. The Andy Dalton one week performance is, I think, there. But I think you're definitely putting everything on the Bengals on this week.
Well, last week was also must win. So I think every week's going to be a must win. You know what? What's crazy, though? I think there hasn't been too many 0-3 teams that made the playoffs. How many games are they going to win this year? Like, does like 9 wins get them in the playoffs? Do they get the wild card? I think now winning the division is out of the question. Just to try to sprinkle in another 3 to 4 losses for the rest of the year is kind of tough.
It's tough, but they have all their division games still to play. So you get 2 games against the Browns still. You got the Titans. You got the Giants still on their schedule. The Raiders are kind of still out there. I know they looked, you know, better recently, but there are some winnable games down the stretch. But then there's some tough games. You got, you know, you're going to have to go versus the Eagles. You got a Cowboys game in Dallas late in the season. So there's some winnable stuff there, but I don't know if 9 wins is going to get it done. But they're going to have to really make some headway in those divisional game against the Steelers and Ravens to make, because if they don't, I think they're definitely done.
Yeah, I don't think 9 wins gets them in. Divisional games, like Jason said, they've got to win those, but they got to win these games, these gimme games against Carolina. They already blew one against New England. Say what you want about Washington, Jaden Daniels. Washington played a great game. I don't take anything away from – I didn't think Cincinnati played poorly, just – Washington played great. They've got to beat Carolina. And then this division, we're going to get into Baltimore's got Buffalo. Steelers, you were mentioning, might lose. Cleveland, we're not high on. They're traveling to Vegas. If everybody in the division loses and Cincinnati wins, you're a game closer. So we'll see how it goes.
It'd be big. You know what would be crazy, though? Like Andy Dalton facing his former team, he did pretty good with the Bengals. How nuts would it be if he pulled out another 300-yard, 3-touchdown performance and pulled out a victory there? That'd be fucking nuts.
He could essentially end the Bengals season and any chance of making the playoffs if he can beat him on Sunday.
And I think it's a slight possibility. I'm a little nervous just how good they looked last week, you know, that veteran leadership. But it was against the Raiders. The only one that was surprised about the Raiders flopping that much was probably their head coach. But it's a first-year situation.
Like Jason said, I think the magic show for Andy Dalton's over. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Yeah, fair enough. Next game, Los Angeles Rams against Jason's Chicago Bears. Jason, me and Aaron went on a little rant on the panic meter. I don't want to take it yet because we want to wait till the next game, but you're at a 1 last time. Let's do our weekly poll. How are you feeling?
We're still at a 1. No panic.
We're still at a 1.
I mean,
nothing fazes this guy.
No.
Maybe
no.
You should be the coach.
No, I mean, There is cause for some concern for the Bears overall, but if the panic meter on Caleb Williams, biggest passing game he's had, you know, so far, over 300 yards passing, got 2 touchdowns, there was 2 picks in there, so things to work on. But offensive line, I don't want to go on a diatribe every week about the Bears offensive line, but since I wasn't there on Monday, there was a pretty great photo going around Twitter of on the 4th and goal, terrible option play that Shane Waldron called, and 4 of the 5 offensive linemen are just laying on the ground as 4 deep, you know, defenders go after Caleb and Swift on the option. So there is offensive line issues. People know that. Still very iffy on Shane Waldron. There was some stats that came out on offensive coordinators that the Bears interviewed or were in the final 6 pool. The top 2 that they were that are so far from a total offense was Kubiak and Kingsbury right now, who are leading some offensive that are up and down the field. And Waldron's obviously performance has been the worst from an offensive standpoint. So not in a panic. Bears still have a very favorable schedule. They got a beat up Rams team coming in, running the ball. I hate to preach this, but like we need to establish the run. The Bears need to get there. The offensive line needs to push forward. I'm not sure if Swift's the guy. A lot of people on Twitter talking about DeAndre Swift not being the guy. He's averaging like 1.4 yards a carry or something outrageous. Some in the news that Roschon Johnson is going to get a bunch of carries this week or get more of the carries. He's got some stuff in practice. So could just see a different back behind there that gets them moving. But need to see something better out of that offensive line plowing in the running game this week to protect Caleb. But I like the Bears. I think the Rams are pretty beat up. This is the type of Bears victory I'd expect.
Yeah, I agree with Jason. I'm taking the Bears to beat the Rams. Rams, they're banged up, come from behind, winning against the 49ers. Everything's looking great for them. But, yeah, the run game, I think the run game, power run game is going to be the key for the Bears. They're going to just run it down the Rams' throat, keep it on them. Defense up front's going to control the game, get pressure on Stafford. Rams don't have a lot of wide-out options. Classic Bears defense shows up, special teams take the Bears at home.
I'm leaning towards a possible upset here from the Rams, but they don't have anybody on their squad left. Everyone's in the hospital. But the way they game plan and beat the 49ers, the way Stafford looks, if I'm going with like experience from like the coaching and from the starting quarterback, I'm going to have to lean towards the Rams. But it is a tough game at Chicago. I don't know who to go for in this one, but it might be my upset pick on Sunday. Let's do Jets, Broncos. Jets favored by 7.5, 49.5 over under. I'm surprised it's actually this far apart for the spread.
The Jets are the better team, obviously. Aaron Rodgers starting to get more comfortable. We talked about that, I think, in the last pod after that Thursday night game. Just looked much better, more mobile in the pocket, finding wide receivers. But yeah, 7.5 for a team in Denver who's played everyone fairly close so far this year. That the win, big win against the Buccaneers for a Buccaneers team that came out hot. And then the first two games of the year, they were tight with both the Seahawks and the Steelers. So as bad as many people think the Broncos were going to be, they played very competitive to be giving up 7.5. That's a lot of points. I mean, I'd be staying away from the Jets. The Jets win the game, but 7.5 is a lot. It's going to be a lot tighter, I think, than what that line shows.
Yeah, 7.5 is a lot to give up. I agree with Jason. I think that's probably too much to give up in this case. Jets coming off that extra rest with the Thursday game last week against the Patriots. They looked good. Rodgers looked good. Mobility was there. Defensively, they looked strong. You got the Broncos coming in. Broncos seemed to figure a few things out, not turning the ball over, converting in the red zone. Got the run game going against Tampa. Like you guys said, Denver's been competitive in every game. They've just had a few turnovers here and there that have cost them. I think they keep it close, but the Jets, they're the side. They will win this game.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I think it would be closer than what everyone thinks. But Jets at home, Rodgers looks sharp. The over-under is kind of tricky. It's very tricky, 39.5. I typically like to make those bets, but 39, I'm not really sure what to expect from the Broncos offense. They had a great turnout last week. Jets had a great turnout last week, but I'm going to lean straight forward on the money line. Jets all the way. Bucks versus the Eagles. Eagles slight favorites, 1.5, which has been the common denominator here this season. They're doing like a lot of 1.5, 1 point spreads here. Up over under 43.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting game. Buccaneers obviously eliminated the Eagles last year in the playoffs. Eagles coming off a late fourth quarter win. Tampa didn't show up last week at home. I think the key is for the Bucs, can they get some of those interior defensive linemen back to stop the run game of the Eagles? The Eagles are banged up. A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, I don't know if he's going to play with a concussion. Hurts have been making a ton of mistakes, turning the ball over. Nick Sirianni, we talked about at Rome on Monday.
Yeah.
Just all the game management and the go for it, go for it, go for it. I'm going to take Tampa Bay to bounce back and get a win here.
Just real tough. Feeling good about Tampa after the first 2 weeks, but just the way they looked last week they look bad out of nowhere against the Broncos.
It was an ugly week of football.
The Eagles, you just expect so much more from them week to week. I'm going to lean with Aaron. I don't know. The key is going to be Saquon for the Eagles at this point this season. I think what we see in this game is how effective they're going to be in the running game with Saquon is really going to open up. I'm going to go Eagles in this game. I don't think any upset this time. I think Eagles.
I think so far, Eagles have had too many close calls. Everyone's questioning, what is Sirianni doing now? He's the head coach. He's not the offensive plays. Like, what is he doing? He seems to be just giving Hurts a hard time. They're not gelling. Hurts is turning the ball over. I think Bucks return back to the winning column this weekend. They'll get the upset. And I think it'll be a shootout. I think this will be definitely over the 46. Actually, I have 43 on some spots, 44.5. I think it's still going over 44. Next game, Cardinals versus the Commanders. Cardinals slight favorites, 3.5, over under 50. So everyone's expecting a shootout.
Yeah, I think everybody this week is going to be on the Commanders, what we saw Monday against the Bengals. I like Arizona, and I like Arizona big. I wasn't impressed by what I saw in Washington defensively. If it wasn't for the Bengals having to kick a few field goals, they would have won that game and outscored Washington in what was a shootout. I think Kyler Murray has a big game. I think Marvin Harrison Jr., James Conner comes back. I think Arizona's defense, Cincinnati, we talked about it, they're banged up. Cincinnati's a little quicker on the perimeter on the outside. They'll be able to contain some of these bigger plays that Washington got on Monday. Arizona by 10 plus.
Arizona by 10?
Yeah, big win for Arizona.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I like Arizona too, especially this line opened at -5.5 for the Cardinals, now seeing it down to -3.5. So I think everyone's feeling really good about the Commanders after what they saw on Monday night. But I'm with Aaron on this one. I think it was a little bit of fool's gold for them for what they saw, for how much the Bengals were giving up to Jaden Daniels. So a little bit of coming back to earth for Washington, and the Cardinals really bounced back, hit some big stuff offensively. 3.5, I think, is, yeah, that's easy for the Cardinals to cover this week. I'm going Arizona.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. Cardinals, I expect them to have a bounce back game. Murray has been looking pretty fluid. I got his last name right correctly this time. Commanders look great. I think they're going to be competitive all year round. I think I'd call that right from the get-go, but it's an away game. They're coming to the West Coast. Cardinals, I think they cover the 3.5. 49ers at Patriots, or 49ers and Patriots. Big spread on this one, 10.5 in favor of the 49ers. Overrunners, 40.5.
Yeah, I'd stay away from the spread. 10.5 is a lot of points given all the injuries the 49ers have on offense. Sounds like George Kittle will be back. 49ers in desperate mode. They need the win. Patriots were kind of a feel-good story their first 2 weeks. Looked more like what we thought last week on the road against the Jets. They're traveling all the way to the West Coast to take on a 49ers team that's desperate for a victory. 49ers get the bounce-back win at home.
Yeah, I agree with Aaron. A lot of points, but a definite big win needed for the 49ers up in Rome's up there in San Francisco. So Niners win, but I'd stay away from it. That's a lot of points. And the Patriots, while probably depleted on talent, you know, and they did get blown out by the Jets, the Bengals-Seahawks game, they kept it tight. I think you're going to see some tight D, and but Niners get pull up the W.
Tight D, huh? Love it. Yeah, I think 49ers are going to come out firing. Purdy's been looking great. In my opinion, top five looking. He's looking like a top five quarterback right now in the NFL. And Pats, yeah, feel good story in the first 2 weeks. They return back to the norm. I don't think they can keep it up for this week, at least not for this week. We'll see how they do the rest of the season. 10.5, that's a lot. I'll go with you guys, 49ers.
We're going to say that, and they're going to come out and just blow them out.
Right?
They might.
The
they might.
Guaranteed wins. The guaranteed wins are never guaranteed. Raiders against the Browns. Wow. I have no opinion on this game. I have no stock. I don't know who's going to show up.
I think this is a good that. Like 2. This is a good 2 o'clock nap game in the afternoon.
It is. It really is.
Yeah, Browns traveled to Las Vegas. Both teams 1-2. Both teams coming off disappointing home performances last week. I don't know what to expect really from the Raiders. I think they're with Antonio Pierce, what he said, you know, players making business decisions. I think that's going to carry over, not in a positive way. Deshaun Watson goes in, Browns get the W in Vegas.
I'm with Aaron on this. While the Raiders did, you know, that Ravens win's going to hold a lot of weight for where they were at just because it was so surprising. But, you know, Minshew, we've talked about it since the beginning of the year. This is not a starting quarterback. He's, you know, a good backup, and we're going to be riding with him. I just don't see it where they're going to consistently be able to do it. Losing against the Panthers, what everyone thought was the worst team in the league to this point. The Browns got some talent, and I think from defensively, they could really shut this Las Vegas, wherever they play now, they really shut this Raiders offense down for what that defensive line does for Cleveland. So I'm taking the Browns in this one as well.
As Chargers versus the Chiefs. Fun divisional game. Chiefs favored by 7, which is nuts in my opinion. Chiefs look like the worst 3-0 team in the whole league. Over under 40 points. I'm actually going with Chargers in the upset this week.
You're on your own there, Rome. Chargers, though I do like them, they're doing some great things on defense. They've got a ton of injuries. Quarterback's not right. Offensive lineman hurt. Not enough weapons in the passing game to put a big threat to this Chiefs defense. Mahomes and the crew, they'll find a way to escape. I got the Chiefs winning in L.A.
Comfortably?
Not comfortably. They're going to have trouble scoring against this defense, but they will eventually wear them down. And like I said, the Chargers just don't have enough right now offensive weapons. With that offensive line banged up, the Chiefs got a really, really good defense. Feels like a 24-17, probably a push on the spread type game.
Yeah, I'd stay away from the spread. It's going to be right around it. Harbaugh's teams are going to compete all season and keep these games close. The Chiefs haven't really blown anyone away offensively so far. Every single one of them's games close. As Rome said, the worst 3-0 team. I don't know. The Steelers are out there at 3-0. But
you're just hating. You're just hating.
I am. But Chiefs win, but I'd stay away from the spread on that.
Okay. I will stay alone. Cool. What else do we got? Ravens and Bills. That's going to be a good game. Ravens are the favorite. -2.5, over under 46.5.
Yeah, Buffalo, you know, if I could take a mulligan on them, I would. They've looked like the best 3-0 team to start the first 3 weeks. Yeah. Josh Allen and crew have looked great. Big win, blowing out Jacksonville on Monday night. So I think the public's going to be high on them again, seeing what they did. And then Baltimore, we've talked about it. They keep blowing fourth quarter leads. But I'm taking the Ravens to win. They'll cover. Defensively, I think Baltimore's going to get up for this game. This is one of those games where big-time quarterbacks coming into their house are going to be fired up defensively. They got the things running right with Derrick Henry, Lamar. It's going to be a close game. It's going to be tight. Baltimore's defense in the end, I think, will be the difference. And I'm taking the Ravens to win.
Yeah, we were pretty off on Buffalo at the beginning of the season, but Josh Allen, again, is proving, taking things to the next level, even without Diggs, and able to do this on his own. You know, really good running game there as well. But the first three games of the season for Buffalo, in hindsight, really have been not impressive teams that Buffalo's played, with the Cardinals, the Dolphins, the Jags. So now they're going to go up the next three games against perennial playoff teams, with the Ravens first, Texans, Jets. So now the Bills are really getting into some kind of prove-it games with their Baltimore, a little bit desperate. This 1-2 start probably shouldn't be where they're at. They should be 2-1. They should have won that Raiders game. And super tight game, but I'm going to go with the Ravens as well.
Yeah, you guys have some pretty valid points. One thing I like to mention, though, you guys did mention that Dolphins were a playoff team. They did play the Dolphins at full speed until Tua went out, and they just dismantled them. So they did have some good opponents, but Ravens are in a tough position. They have to win. They're at home. It's Sunday night game. This is going to be fun. That's going to be a nice Sunday night game to catch. So for me, I'm staying away. I think Ravens have the possibility of pulling away, but I don't want to bet against Josh Allen at this point. The way that he has the offense humming along, they're well-balanced, they're running in the passing attack. Defense has looked solid. DeMar Hamlin's making an interception. He was dead 2 years ago. Who knows? It'll be a fun Sunday night game, though. So you both guys both got the Ravens?
Yep.
Cool. Dolphins and Titans. Dolphins, slight favorites. -1, 36.5.
This is the game. This is the game you stay at work and don't leave to go watch the 4:30 kickoffs.
It's a Monday night game. Hold on. All right. So, like, we have, like, another doubleheader Monday night game. Did you guys like the doubleheader this past Monday? I don't know if we talked about it, Aaron.
Is it a doubleheader? Because they're playing, like, 30 minutes apart. It's
stupid. It's
doubleheader
fucking stupid.
Would mean I mean, I don't know if it's stupid. I mean, you're giving some different options, like, for the Monday night game. No, not long ago, ESPN was getting just, like, Titans, Jags, you know, every Monday night. So, at least giving a little options here right now. But, man, right. this game's going to be rough with no Tua. The Titans, they've been bad. I'd stay away from this game, but I feel if the Dolphins are going to come back, you know, at some point this year, if Tua is going to come back and play, they're just going to still try to push for the playoffs. This is a type of Dolphins win if McDaniel's able to figure out to get something out of the offense with the players that he's got. But you know, we'll stand by for the Will Levis turnover of the game and see what could happen. Because man, he's been the superstar of weeks 1, 2, 3 so far of just viral moments.
Yeah, Will Levis has looked bad, but if you go back to last year, his come out party was at Miami in that Monday nighter when he came back and shocked Tua and the Dolphins. You talked about the doubleheader or two games. I like the options because, like last week, we had a blowout in Buffalo, so it was good to go to the other game where we had a shootout.
I like except watching blowouts, so we got treated. I definitely enjoyed it. Yeah.
This isn't a stay away game. I'm really high on Miami. I like the Dolphins this week. I would bet it. Bet it big. This would be one of my top five plays for the week. I think Miami's going to get the job done. Tyler Huntley, I think, is going to get the start at quarterback. Mike McDaniel's got to get that offense rolling. The defense hasn't been bad. Will Levis will make a mistake here and there. I think it's going to be a closer game than people think. Entertaining game, too. I think this one's worth watching, but I like the Dolphins.
That's actually a pretty interesting wrinkle that you mentioned. If Huntley's playing, he did really well with the Ravens. He got a Pro Bowl nod, and granted, nowadays, 15 quarterbacks get a Pro Bowl nod because everyone's injured. But that could be interesting. I thought the Titans should have a couple victories right now. Out of all the 0-3 teams or whoever's left at 0-3, they haven't looked great, but they haven't looked completely shitty either.
They looked bad last week. They looked bad against Green Bay.
I thought they looked pretty good for like a good three quarters, you know. At least pretty competitive. So I like Levis getting the first win this week. That's going to be my upset as well. Jason, you're going the Dolphins, correct?
Yep, I'm going Dolphins.
Yeah. Cool. And the next Monday night game, Seattle and Lions. Lions favorites by 3.5, over under 46.5.
I like the Lions at home. Seattle talked about being one of my surprise teams in the NFC. That's one team I got right out of the many I got wrong. But Seattle, defensively, they've been good, but we look at their opponents. They played against the Broncos, a rookie quarterback. They played against the Patriots, a JV offense. And then last week, not much of an opponent there on offense they played against. I think Detroit has struggled on offense, not scored more than 20 points in any game in regulation. They got 26 against the Rams, but that was 6 points they got in overtime.
Overtime.
Lions are going to have a bounce back. Their offense is going to get rolling. They'll cover the 3.5. Give me to Detroit.
Yeah, I hate to make this all agreement with Aaron episode, but Aaron's right on this. Time for the Lions to break out. This is the type of game in prime time that I think the city of Detroit can get hyped up for this team that's supposed to be contending, you know, for a Super Bowl run here. So I like the Lions as well, too. Aaron did call the Seattle thing. I mean, this is really 3-0 for them. I mean, out of all the 3-0 starts, you called that one too, Rome?
He jumped on the Aaron train.
Jumped on board. Okay. All right. I give credit where credit's due on that. I mean, Rome Steelers surprising 3-0, but I think Seattle just as surprising, you know, so far at the start of this year. But I think this is a time for the Lions to really break out and be, you know, if they're going to take the top class of the NFC, this is the time to kind of prove it in this game.
Yeah, I had Seattle as a wild card with the Niners still winning, but who knows, man? With everyone injured, that division is up for grabs now. It all depends on how the 49ers weather the storm in the coming weeks. But yeah, Detroit all the way. I like Detroit. They've looked kind of shabby so far this season. This is where we start seeing kind of like the cream of the crop of the NFL, like weeks 4 to week 7, they start kind of putting things together and start gearing up for the long run. So I like Detroit to come out on top and definitely cover the spread. I don't know about the over-under, but I like them to win at least by a touchdown. Is that all the games?
It's all the games.
That's it.
That was fun. We'll see how we do, man. We'll keep score. And then let's take a quick break. When we come back, Aaron's games to watch, which, by the way, he sent me and Jason a list of like 25 games, basically 50 teams to watch, which is ridiculous. You can't have all the games to watch to be games to watch.
Don't we just need to just start recording a new episode? It's going to take us like at least an hour.
Yeah, it's ridiculous,
to go through
all these but games. We're going to try to hold Aaron to 10 games.
22 games to
22
watch.
22 games. We'll put up on Twitter.
But I got 10 must-watch games.
Cool.
You got
we'll
the list.
Through it. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, Aaron's 10 must games to watch for college football. Don't go away. We'll be back. College football, games to watch, Aaron Toler edition. Game one. It's a Friday night game. Aaron, you're hilarious, dude. Washington +2 against Rutgers. Rutgers had a great upset last week. I'm really impressed with them. 44.5. I'm guessing you got Washington?
No, I got Rutgers. I'm high on Rutgers. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm taking Rutgers to cover, win at home, keep things going momentum-wise. Washington, this is their first game in the Big Ten. I think this is their first Big Ten conference game.
It is. Yep, it is. Yeah. They played Washington State last week. So
Washington, I mean, Steve Belichick. Washington has only given up touchdown to one of their four opponents this year. That was Washington State. Everybody else has been kicking field goals against them. Probably a low-scoring game, but I like Rutgers at home.
Yeah, the new Big Ten. Is this the longest flight of the Big Ten to go from Washington all the way to New Jersey? This is a big West to East. This is a big West to East flight game. Where if you were talking NFL, like it's always like the West Coast team is not a good one. So you're talking about this being a Friday night game. If there's any sort of like disruption, then that's something to look at too. Because now with the Big Ten going coast to coast, it'll be very interesting how these college teams react to these type of games.
Yeah, like they have to be there already. Like, don't these kids have class? Like, come on.
No, online classes now.
I never did well with online classes. I have to be there in person. I have to.
And you weren't even there in person either, man. So.
Fair enough. Game number two, Colorado, which I'm sick of talking about Colorado. Me and Aaron, we had a long segment last time. Colorado +14 against Central Florida over and under 62.
Yeah, Colorado getting 14. I'll take Colorado to cover the 14. Central Florida to win the game.
Let's go. Florida State. I don't know why this is a game to watch. +6. Of course, this is Aaron's list. Florida State's trash. Then you got SMU, who may or may not be pretty good.
Yeah, Florida State coming off that big win over Rome's next-door neighbor, Cal Bears, last week. Got in the win column. Barely. SMU dropped 60-plus on TCU. Florida State won't even score half of probably what TCU did. I'll take SMU to beat the Seminoles. Florida State, they'll cover the 6, I believe.
So you got SMU winning?
Yeah.
No more love for your Seminoles?
I told you Monday, man, we could do a poll. Who's going to win more games, Florida State or UCLA? I'm not sure they're going to win more than two or three each team.
I don't know, man. UCLA's pretty bad. Game number four of the week. Kentucky +17 at Ole Miss. 54 points. I think this might be Ole Miss's like first maybe tougher test of the season.
That's why they're on the watch list. You know, Jason's mentioned Ole Miss has been beaten up on cupcakes. Kentucky, the last time we saw them on the field, gave Georgia a run for their money. This game's at Oxford, Mississippi, home of Eli Manning's Mississippi Rebels. So I think it's going to be a good game. I like Mississippi to win. Don't necessarily know if they'll cover the 17, but I'm curious to see how they do against their first legit opponent of the season.
YJZ, what you got?
Nah, I mean, Ole Miss is going to be one of the contenders for the SEC, but they really don't have – yeah, Kentucky this week, South Carolina next week. Then we get into LSU and Oklahoma, who probably – you know, I think Ole Miss has more talent than both of those teams. So I mean, personally, I'm rooting for undefeated showdown versus Georgia at the end of the year, because that should be some of the powers of the SEC coming out when you have Georgia, Ole Miss, Tennessee. Ole Miss wins this game, pretty big spread. It's always weird in college, but I think Ole Miss blows them out.
Yeah. You mentioned Georgia undefeated, so you got them. That's also on Aaron's game of the week, number 9. Georgia -2 against Alabama for 9.5. You got Georgia winning that, Jason?
I do. I mean, Georgia, I still think is the class. Aaron, has it been 3 years since they've lost in the regular season? If not more, I can't even keep count at this point where Georgia's
at.
Yeah,
I think they won 50 straight games regular season, conference, non-conference.
Yeah, this is a game for them to come out and show. I know they struggled a couple weeks ago, but I think Georgia's was getting ready for this game. This is what they were targeting, and I think this will be a big Georgia win.
I'm going to go the opposite. Roll Tide. Alabama, home underdog. Kellen DeBoer, big game. Can he make a statement? Can he get out of Nick Saban's shadow? Kirby Smart. Georgia's banged up. The quarterback's got a sore AC joint, non-throwing shoulder. Legit first-round right guard center out for Georgia. I like Bama to win as a home underdog.
Wow, I love it. I think this is the first time Alabama's been an underdog in what?
Texas, I believe, was a favored last year when they went in there in week 2 or 3. It's very rare. Like, they've been home underdog Alabama maybe 2 or 3 times over the last decade at home.
Yeah, it's really rare. So that's going to be a fun game. And I think that's Saturday night.
Saturday night, 4:30 West Coast time.
Oh, man, I can't miss it.
And this is the first of 4 big games for Georgia, too. So, I mean, I mentioned Ole Miss and Tennessee, Alabama, but that Georgia's also got at Texas on their schedule as well, too. So it's not out of the realm that Georgia has 2 losses out of the year, because they got some 4 pretty big opponents here coming up. SEC is going to be very interesting, because you probably have, you know, they always are stacked, but you got 5 teams, you know, in the running for playoff spots here. The first year of the playoff, I think we're looking good, really, out of what the SEC is going to contribute. I know people were giving the SEC a lot of crap the first couple weeks out of the year, but the top of the SEC is stacked, and there's going to be some good football here throughout the year.
I don't know if you guys can pull up their schedules, but I think Alabama has 4 or 5 games against ranked opponents. Georgia just has 3 or 4. Both tough schedules in the SEC. It's going to be really interesting to see if Georgia makes it out to try to get a three-peat in there. Let's go back, Aaron, though, to your Ole Miss and Kentucky. Oh, no, you actually did say Ole Miss, right?
Yeah, Ole Miss wins. But like I said, this will be their first, you know, legit game against a power conference team. Kentucky's shown they can play with the big boys. Georgia, they had that bad loss against South Carolina when they show up. This could be a blowout, but we'll get a better gauge, I think, on where Ole Miss is versus, you know, a 67-10 win they've been getting week in, week out to start the year.
Cool. We got another game on here. Little old Pac-12 action. Arizona +10 against Utah, 47.5. Why is this game on your watch?
I got Utah an upset alert. Utah chases team in the Big 12. I love everything they're doing. They're coming off a brutal dogfight of a win against Oklahoma State. Now you get Arizona, old Pac-12 rival, coming off a bye week after disappointing Friday night loss 2 weeks ago against Kansas State. This is an upset alert game. Keep an eye on it. I don't know what Cam Rising's health is, if he's going to play or not. Arizona covers the 10 points, maybe wins outright.
I'm still riding with Utah on this one. I think the Oklahoma State game without Cam Rising was a real big test for Utah. They got a slate of former Pac-12 or Pac-12 games with Arizona, then Arizona State, but This is Utah's time, I think, right now to put some wins up on the board, and then, you know, some, I think they got some coasting there in the middle of the season up until they play BYU.
Why is this an upset for Utah if they're a favorite?
Because I'm Arizona. I'm saying they should be on upset alert. Arizona, I think, is going to pull the upset maybe.
Oh, got it. I totally misunderstood that. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. But you like Arizona, though. You always like them.
I'm high on Arizona. But they, you know, they disappointed against Kansas State. They've got good quarterback, good wide receiver. Their defense is a concern. But I think Utah coming off that road win, that was just a brutal dogfight, tough game, grind. You're a little sore. Now you go against a little more finesse team, different than what we saw last week. It's going to be a tight game. This is going to be a tight game in Utah.
By the way, I don't know if you noticed, but you've always rooted for Arizona teams, I think, since like Luke Walton, like the basketball squad.
Arizona basketball is my squad, bro. Arizona basketball is my squad.
You've always Arizona went for them. Football. I just don't get it. You're like an Arizona guy. And I don't think ever think you ever stepped inside the state of Arizona.
I've been there plenty of times, bro. Plenty of times.
What was
eating
last
their
time?
Shit there, piss there, you name it.
Well, you need a tan, brother, because you're looking pretty white. You haven't seen the sun in a long time.
Been about 30 days since we were in Vegas, but who's counting?
It's fucking wild, dude.
He knows Vegas is not in Arizona, right? Or is that was just overall sun commentary right there? Okay.
They both look the same, I guess.
I'm just asking the questions of the follow up from how we spelled college and some of the things going on. I just want to make sure where you were going into geography at this point too.
Yeah, I don't know. Next game, Washington State. Is that a +7 against Boise State 64?
Yeah, this
Tell
is
us
a
more.
Big. Big. The winner of this game is the front runner for the Group of Five non-Power Four conference team to get into the playoffs. This is that game. This is the front runner. This is a big game. Boise State at home, 7-point favorite. Boise State's going to win. I'm going to stay away from the spread. I know Jason's got Boise State in the playoff. Given what we saw from Northern Illinois taking a tough loss, Memphis losing, and a couple other Group of Five teams losing, winner of this game's in the driver's seat going forward.
Yeah, I agree with Aaron. Stay away from the points, but Boise State still, you know, they got nothing but unranked teams the rest of their schedule right now. So if they can go through and their only loss is to a top 10 Oregon team, you know, this is a team that's right in the playoffs, like I said at the beginning of the season.
All right, fair enough. Game number 7. BYU +3 against Baylor.
What surprised me here is BYU getting points. We saw what they did at Kansas State, top 15 team, blew them out. Baylor coming off the disappointing Hail Mary loss to Colorado, had the game in the bag.
Yeah.
Let the receiver get behind them, 50-yard TD, lost it in overtime. This is an interesting game. BYU got some big wins. Kansas State, they won at SMU. Now they're on the road against Baylor. Don't really know how good Baylor is. Got smoked up by Utah a few weeks ago. Had Colorado win in the bag. Let that one go. It seems BYU +3 would be the play, but I'm staying away. Maybe Baylor at home gets the job done.
Game to watch, but I did watch that BYU game. I think I texted you guys when I was watching it. Those are one of those games, though, even that blow them out. Like, the game got out of hand. It was a couple possessions here and there, turnovers. All of a sudden, all the momentum's going BYU's way. I don't play in the result on that one versus a number, you know, a ranked Kansas State team. I don't think they're 38-9 better than Kansas State. I think that was just situation of the game. It's going to be a tight one. I guess what Aaron's putting in this game to watch is going to be close, but I think it's a pick 'em.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not really sure what they expect in this game, but I'm definitely going to watch it, I think, if it's available.
If one of the 22, you can figure out which one to watch of Aaron's must watch.
Yeah, Aaron has some pretty other interesting games. I wouldn't say they're watchable, though, but we'll definitely post it up on X and on Instagram because the handwriting's phenomenal. Next game, Louisville +7 against Jason's Notre Dame. 46.
Now this is a game. This is a game to watch right here.
See, I told you I'd get one of these games right. Louisville. Louisville's right now second, third best team in the ACC behind Miami, Clemson, undefeated going into the Fighting Irish. Notre Dame take on Jason's squad. Notre Dame, basically their schedule's fairly easy, but this will be a tough game. But I'll take Notre Dame to win. I think Notre Dame covers too.
Yeah, big test for Notre Dame. Last two opponents with Purdue and Miami of Ohio. Just, you know, blowout, bounce back stuff. Riley Leonard, really him getting out of the pocket the last couple of games, getting more comfortable in the offense against not great opponents. So this will be a little bit of a challenge with Louisville. I think they win. I don't want to get – that's my personal fandom speaking right now. But what do you got, 7 points? Points for Louisville. That's a lot of points, honestly, for Notre Dame. Like, I mean, the last two games look better. I'm nervous,
Louisville beat Notre Dame last year down at the old KFC stadium. So
yeah, and that was during that run, like Louisville, the tight game versus Duke last year. It was kind of in that run for Notre Dame where they should have been blowing these teams out and lost to Louisville. This is probably their hardest game up until USC at the end of the year for Notre Dame. So a big win here, you know, they could be only one loss going into that final game at USC. But I said the same thing after they beat Texas A&M and they came out flat against Northern Illinois. I'm confident, but I'm pessimistically confident on Notre Dame this week.
Yeah, this could be really good. I think no one has really expected Louisville to be this good this year. Their offense looked pretty fluid. I'm getting like some weird upset vibes again, but I'm hoping Notre Dame wins. I like when they win, but this is a dangerous game. I'd be nervous if I was Jason. Any Notre Dame fan, this is a tough one.
I'm nervous whenever any of my teams play Rome. It's just a thing. There's no comfortable watching any of my teams.
Well, dude, the White Sox just went on a 3-game winning streak. Congratulations. You get to break the record for losses when they play the red-hot Detroit Tigers, you know?
Listen, you're getting ahead of me right now. But, yeah, biggest series of the year. We saved it till, you know, the final week of the season to get that 3-game sweep of the Angels.
I love it. We'll talk a little baseball after this, I think, just a small little segment. But cool. That's going to be a fun game. Is that a Saturday night game? Or?
Yeah, probably Saturday night, NBC. I don't know.
Jason probably a day game then. It's probably a day game.
It's 12:30, so yeah, middle of the day.
I got to plan out when I'm going to go through some hoops and watch some college basketball, or football, rather. Georgia, or actually, we already talked about Georgia and Alabama, so Aaron's 10th game, Ohio State minus 23.5 against Michigan State, 48 points. That seems like a little low for the over-under.
Yeah, maybe a little low for the over-under. I think it's high for the spread. Ohio State hasn't played anybody all year. Michigan State's tougher than people think. This will be a close game, closer game than the odds makers have it at. Michigan State to cover at home. As long as they don't turn the ball over, which they've been prone to, that really hurt them against Boston College this last week, where they turned the ball over 4 times. Ball control, if they can do that, they'll keep it close. But Ohio State wins, Michigan State covers.
Fair. That's a big spread.
Huge spread. No disagreements with Aaron on that one.
Cool. Just so everyone's curious, some other games that Aaron has. You won't talk about them unless, Aaron, you want to shoot out like a quick one. Stanford plus 21.5 against Clemson. We have Northern Illinois against NC State. North Carolina against Duke. That might be kind of fun, actually. I think Duke is undefeated in North Carolina.
Well, the over-under, if you take a look, that's 56. We know North Carolina is good giving that up themselves.
Yeah, and I think there is
a game now that I look at it, and I want to get your guys' thoughts on this. And it's in the Big Ten. You got Illinois getting plus 18 at Penn State.
I was just looking at that right now. I literally got Fighting Illini on my screen looking it up. I don't know how this was in your top 10. This is a top 25 matchup in the Big Ten. A lot of points for Illinois. They took down that Kansas team that had a lot of hype early in the year in week two. I think Penn State wins this game, but the Illini cover it and make this game close.
I agree on everything. I don't know how I missed it out of my top 10. All the pressure you guys giving me how to spell shit, right? I guess couldn't count to 10 properly there.
Oh my God. All right, so one more game I do want to talk about. Maybe two more games. Wisconsin and USC. And then also, where's the Michigan game? Minnesota plus 9.5 against Michigan's anemic offense, 35.5.
Why do we want to talk about Wisconsin?
I guess just, I mean, Wisconsin does good when they travel out west. They do
They're
good.
Actually pretty hit or miss. I actually like watching them, and Aces has Wisconsin fans there all the time. I love passing by and talking shit when they're down. It's a fun pastime of mine.
Yeah, I don't think this game is close. I think USC no. blows out Wisconsin.
Fair enough.
Michigan, you said 35.5. I mean,
yeah.
years past, Michigan themselves would get 35.5. I tend to think the game's going to go over. I think Michigan can find a way to score 28. I mean, if Iowa can score 31 on Minnesota on the road, Michigan should be able to get 28, and Minnesota can score 10.
That Fresno State against UNLV is pretty interesting, too, since the quarterback bounced, and so did, like, another running back, right? They're 3-0. Inside track to make the playoffs, and then you hear, like, this NIL stuff. It's fucking ridiculous.
Well, considering, Rome, you promised me a lot of NIL shit and, you know, all this stuff you've been talking. I may have to bounce, too.
Jason, anything else, or we're good at college football?
We're good at college football.
All right. Okay, we talked NFL, an ugly Thursday night football game. We covered the Lions for week four. We did some college football. We're interested in a little baseball right now. And congrats. First of all, congrats to Jason's Chicago White Sox for their first sweep of the season, going 3-0 against the lowly Angels. I think this is like their second series in the past month or so. And they get to avoid setting the record for most losses in the season. I know Jason, we're going to give him a platform to talk more about that next week. But I just want to do a quick congrats on that. Congrats on Shohei Ohtani, 50-50 ball. Everyone's suing each other, trying to get that money. Some 18-year-old kid trying to collect on that $500,000, potentially $1 million that they're going to auction that ball for. They're projecting that it's going to hit 4.5. That's nuts in itself. That kid did get
four
pumped out of ball.
Million? Those, $4.5 million they're projecting?
That's, yeah.
Crazy.
Is that nuts?
Yeah, I mean, I was hearing, you know, $1.2 million, but 4.5.
Guess how much the Dodgers offered.
Yeah, the Dodgers are cheap. Dodgers are cheap. They only play their players, bro. They don't give a shit about the fans. Been telling you guys that for decades. That's why I love
it. It was a game.
Losing.
It was a nice stadium. It's one of the better stadiums in the league.
It is one of the nice stadiums in the league. It's one of the worst parking lots and getting out stadiums in the league.
Oh, the place sucks.
Dude, it took us 90 minutes to go like 20 feet. I could have walked already down and waited for you.
So when I worked for the Dodgers and McCourt, was that his name? Was still running the fucking team?
Was it
nothing. We had to park with all the other fans. Like, no special parking. Walk our ass into the fucking stadium. It was brutal. Leaving took 2.5 hours. Going back to, you know, Cal State Fullerton, I think I was going to at the time. Yeah, the stadium blows. Traffic there blows. There's like two lanes going up a hill. It's like a volcano. I feel like I'm traveling in Peru or something. You know, it's rough.
Gives you one of the best, you know, scenery views in baseball, though. So for all that,
beautiful.
you get to the top beautiful. And, you know, you get there, you see that, you know, horizon with the palm trees and stuff. You get that. So I'll give the Dodgers that. But
so one
I
thing
think
I hate,
overall.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So one thing I hate about living in San Francisco is I love going to Oracle Park. That's what it's called now, Oracle Park, former AT&T. It's a beautiful view of the bay. When it's hot and sunny, it's great. The nice breeze. You know, their hot dogs suck. It's no Dodger dog for sure. All the buns are smashed. I usually go for like a Tony's slice of pizza, get like a Ghirardelli's, you know, hot for Sunday, knock back, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 beers if I'm feeling good. It's a good time. I love Oracle Park.
No, I agree with you. I was up there 2 years ago when the White Sox were in town. I put that as my, I think I've been to a 10 or 11 stadium so far for baseball. And I put that up there as my number two stadium. Fenway's been my favorite so far, and there's more of a nostalgia feel there. But Oracle, I had a great time. I think the view's phenomenal. Access to the ballpark super easy as far as like walking to it and everything,
great.
And everything like that. You're just in and out, and a lot of good stuff around the park. So yeah, that's up there for me. Last week I was at the Brewers Stadium, saw the Brewers Diamondbacks game last Friday. Really nice stadium as well too. Very, very impressive on that. Had some, great view around the stadium as you're going from a seat perspective. I was sitting in the outfield. Super entertaining game. There's some back-to-back home runs in the game. Was it Bernie Brewer or whatever their mascot is going down the slide? He slid down and then had to run back up and slide down again after a home run. But yeah, I enjoyed that stadium in Milwaukee as well too. That was up there. But agree with you on Oracle. That's up there. But I wanted to get. Rome, we talk about you mentioned the White Sox. They staved off the worst record of all time. We still got three more games against a potential playoff team with Detroit, which I think there's a lot of storylines going into this game. Probably only on White Sox Twitter, but you got AJ Hinch managing the Tigers. This was a guy that many White Sox fans thought was going to be the manager in 2021 that former GM Rick Hahn wanted to hire. And this is where Reinsdorf went off his rocker and just unilaterally hired Tony La Russa. But Hinch was supposed to be the guy, so much so, many, I think, close friends of Hinch thought he was going to be the White Sox manager, which, in my opinion, he should have been. So you got that in for Detroit. Take, a couple years turner in this team around where he went. And then former White Sox play-by-play announcer Jason Benetti, who I'm a huge fan of. I think he's one of the best play-by-play guys in the game right now, does baseball, does college, really does everything. The White Sox let him go because White Sox owner Jerry Reinsdorf, doesn't get his sense of humor or whatever it is, and we just let him go to the Tigers at a certain point. So it could be some poetic stuff for the futility it is the Chicago White Sox that the manager that probably should have been theirs to lead a team that had all the potential in the world to have a long run is on the other side, and then you've got the play-by-play call of the White Sox so much calling for his new team of the record-setting 121st loss for the White Sox at some point this weekend for Detroit. So I was in Chicago on Tuesday. I did not go to the game. I had this feeling of it could be cool to go see history, but I have pledged that I will not invest any more money to the White Sox to invest into Jerry Reinsdorf. I'll give you more of that later. But of course, if I would have went to that game, they would have won and I wouldn't have seen history and I would have just paid money to see the White Sox win, which was a super interesting game watching it because you had the crowd booing the White Sox when they scored and then a chant of sell the team the entire time as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Jason, do the White Sox fans want them to break this record? Are they rooting for this team to lose? Because it seemed
they
were showing the fans TV, they were rooting for the Angels. Like they didn't want the team to come back and win.
Yeah, they want to see history. It's all over Twitter. They're excited. Yeah. That's why they sold out the games this past weekend. They're like, fuck it. Let's embrace it. Let's watch the losingest team in MLB history. They're embracing it.
If we're going to go this far with it, that's what they wanted. I wasn't rooting one for the other, but if you're going to get this way, embrace the history. And Rome's right. That's why they were out there at this thing. Let me witness history of the losingest team of all time at this point. So it's sad. I felt bad for some of these players. A lot of things have gone wrong, but this team is so bad. You've taken the variability out of baseball where generally even the worst teams in baseball, you win 50, 55 games because of just randomness that is baseball. But this team is so bad. It took the randomness out of it. It's just, hey, we're blowing. The White Sox were 0-94. It passed the seventh inning, had never come back past the seventh inning this year. The game on Tuesday night against the Angels and their comeback made them 1-94 being behind in the seventh inning. So that's how bad offensively this team was the entire year. So today's game was super interesting. Locally, I think for us, I got a lot of friends that are Angels fans. So today was either the Angels were going to break their own personal most losses in a season, which they did. versus the White Sox all-time most losses in a season. So just two terrible franchises. And, you know, both, I think, fairly poorly ran. Different reasons why they're poorly ran. But it's been kind of sad. It's been sad this last week of the season. But and we brought up the Oakland A's, too, because that's an organization which, you know, have had this terrible stadium up in the Bay Area. John Fisher bought this team in 2005, has done nothing with it. There was great stuff and great articles written, a lot of stuff today for this final game at the Oakland Coliseum, but it's super sad because these owners that do not invest in the team, and it's not even just about like payroll all the time, because you've seen organizations out there that can win games and not have the biggest payroll out there, but there's other things, investment from an ownership perspective. And this guy, you know, has owned the A's since 2005. And I saw something that, I'm trying to think, who was the third baseman for the early 2000 A's? Man, I had it on the tip of my tongue who it was, like, Eric. I can't forget. Regardless, he had like a $66 million contract they signed in 2004, the year before Fisher brought the team. They still haven't eclipsed that as a contract, you know, total contract for the A's in the time John Fisher's owned this team. And when you compare the A's and the White Sox, the only two teams that have never given out a $100 million contract in baseball. So, you know, there's payroll things of it, but the A's have played in this crappy stadium. You know, why would I go see this team? They don't invest in it. They don't invest in the fans. And you saw it today in Oakland that, hey, if there's something to play for, the A's fans are going to come out for it. But they've just been totally disrespected for 18 years. And there's some great pieces on, like, how, you know, John Fisher has always wanted to move this team. He never really intended it on being in Oakland. And it is really, I think, a sad day for the state of baseball in some of these ways, because, I mean, there's a lot of things, and this is a bigger forum for this, where this is maybe the turning point for the valuation of baseball teams and like what they're truly worth. You saw football teams, the Redskins going for like $7 billion.
Was ridiculous. I don't,
but you know, I think the Marlins went for $2 billion a while back. I don't know if you're ever going to get $2 billion for any of these baseball teams again. And so it'll be very interesting, the investments some of these owners are making is if pro sports are really going to pay. And I think the White Sox and the A's are two examples of teams that these owners are just going to put a crap product out there, you know, really kill fan bases and make you not want to root for this team. And then it's just going to be a nothingless stuff of just, you know, we develop people, maybe trade them away, don't invest. You know, White Sox already saying we are not players in free agency going into the year. So it's sad all around for state of baseball. A lot of great stuff in baseball right now. But this end of the season, between the articles written on the White Sox and A's, this is the very bottom and bad part of Major League Baseball right now.
Yeah, at least up here in the Bay, they've been hammering A's owner John Fisher, like his letter to the fans saying like it's tone deaf, like, oh, we want to keep the team in Oakland. We really tried, when everyone knows that they didn't really try. They had like probably like four or five stadium proposals done. The last one was going to be phenomenal, kind of revitalizing the whole Oakland airport down to downtown Oakland. It would have been really great. It would probably have been like one of the better baseball parks in the country. And they just, John Fisher just wanted to be all publicly subsidized, and that wasn't going to happen. I think one sportscaster up here on Channel 7, he called him a notorious penny pitcher. And for being a billionaire, he never learned the fact that it takes money to make money. This guy has squeezed his cheeks, you know, so close together, doesn't want a fucking dime falling out of his ass. And they've been hammering home. Some guys, like Aaron mentioned on the break, tried stealing the seats from the stadium. They stopped everyone from doing that. But I haven't been to the stadium in a while. I used to go whenever the Red Sox came into town, because me being an idiot, you know, I like to root for the Red Sox. And that was fun. But you have like stairs leading to nothing. It just leads to dirt. It's like nowhere to go. They have extra bleachers, like, you know, on the outskirts around the stadium. They only had like five concession stands that actually worked. You know, beers weren't even that much cheaper. They weren't even that cold. And then I think I went to a Steelers game. Steelers against the Raiders before the Raiders bounced out. Ben Roethlisberger like came back from behind, had a great game, and then they just shut the bed and like the Raiders won. I almost got to like 10 fights on the way out of the stadium because I couldn't keep my mouth shut. Great experience. My girlfriend was pulling me out like, let's go, all right. get out of here, but the stadium sucks. It's terrible. So I'm not going to miss the stadium.
Notoriously bad stadium. There was like plumbing issues, stuff like that. You're talking about John Fisher, yeah, and billionaire. Like it was inherited billions. It was family fortune. So
right,
you know, you mentioned spend money to make money. I saw a lot of that too. I did bring up was who I was thinking about earlier. Kind of Eric Chavez was the third baseman. Eric Chavez. So he said in 2004 he signed a 6-year, $66 million contract, to date the biggest contract in A's history. You know,
in 2004, that's crazy.
In 2004, so 20 years later, this is still the biggest contract in A's history. So it's like, you know, I got a long-standing thing on where the White Sox, you know, went wrong for their rebuild, and we can get into that later date. But like, there's a certain point where like you have to spend a certain amount of money to be competitive and have something there. And when you are, it takes you 20 years to try to get a stadium built. I mean, the ineffectiveness of whatever you're doing from a business perspective to really embrace the community and everything around that. Just super sad for an Oakland. Now they're going to be in Sacramento. I don't even think they've broken ground or even got approvals for what's going on in Las Vegas yet. So, I mean, it's going to take a little while to build the stadium. I mean, the NHL's dealing with this a little bit with what used to be the Arizona Coyotes, and now they're playing in Salt Lake City, like the Salt Lake City Hockey Club. You got these lingering franchises out there for some of these leagues where can't find markets. And when it comes to like publicly finance, you know, stadiums, you know, local governments pushing back because of how much these things are worth. We're not giving a free stadium to billionaires. I mentioned the Marlins, you know, they got that stadium built by the city of Miami. It might be the last one that goes, but in Chicago, Jerry Reinsdorf thinks he's going to get public money. By the same time, the Bears are asking for public money for a new stadium on the lakefront as well, too. So just a lot of stuff going on. But when you look in L.A., Steve Ballmer, you know, builds maybe the most up-to-date technological, you know, stadium we've ever seen in the Intuit Dome, pretty much all self-financed from what I recall or whatever. Even the Rams owner, you know, what they did with SoFi, a ton of that was basically self-financed, too. So there's some expectation for these guys. If you're going to get in, you got to build something and it's going to be on you. You're not going to get a ton of public help for, you know, something for free when you're having this $1 billion asset.
Yeah. I mean, if you're putting a shit quality team like the White Sox and A's have, and then you're asking for free money to build stadiums, it's not going to go a long way. If you've got a team that's
winning,
a team that's winning and at least performing, you're putting money into the players and stuff, you got a shot maybe at, you know, getting some funding. But like you guys said, I mean, if you're not going to, you got to spend money to make money. You got to spend money on players. You got to upgrade facilities. What have college teams across all universities and conferences been doing for the last 10, 20 years? Spending money on players and upgrading facilities to get the top end coaches. What do these bottom organizations do? They save every penny and then they wonder why at the end of the day their facilities suck and their programs and teams and organizations are in the shithole. Sad day in Oakland. We'll see what happens with them. I would have liked to see the fans get the seats. I hope they go back after the stadium closed. Kind of do like they do in San Francisco best. 5,000 people mob. Steal what they got to steal and get out of there. It's not worth $900 a seat anyway, so you're free there. DA won't charge you in San Francisco, boys.
Jesus Christ, this is
in Oakland. Is there an Oakland soccer team? I think somebody still plays at the Oakland Coliseum.
So, yeah, there's a new expansion team. There's like a minor league soccer team because I think like that whole multi-level thing that's happening in Europe is starting to happen here in the U.S. So there's a professional team, but it's in the level below MLS. They're the new team that Oakland has been parading that they signed to be the professional league to take over the Coliseum. They committed so much to renovations and all that shit, but it's just, it's not even worth renovating. Just demolish it, rebuild a new one, and move on with it. But to go back with the A's, though, the Sacramento thing might not go through because there's some stuff happening there. So that might not even be a possibility. And plus, they haven't even secured the financing. Nothing's set in stone yet for the Nevada stadium that be, you know, built. There's like a lot of things where John Fisher just only wants like a 30,000 seat stadium. So it's weird. Everything about it is weird. Everyone's staying quiet. And the MLB, they should kick his ass out like they
Fisher's
did like with
weird,
Donald Sterling.
Yeah, Fisher's weird,
yeah,
man.
Just kick his ass out, give someone else. There's plenty of billionaires that would totally buy the stadium. There's also a gag order where billionaires that want to buy the team, they're not allowed to speak on it because they already made offers and MLB is staying quiet. I'm really curious, like, what the hell is going on behind the scenes? It's like this weird, like, mafia, you know, thing going on, and it's not really clear why that's happening.
No, it 100% is. I mean, you get into a good old boys club when you get into this, and you have a lot of different factions within the MLB owners. You've had some new guys come in that, you know, come from different industries. But I mean, just speaking of the White Sox owner, Jerry Reinsdorf, he was one of Bud Selig's, you know, biggest advocates and kind of led like the old contingent that really, you know, it kept people like Mark Cuban out of the sport and some of these really progressive, you know, owners and thinkers that could have done more to modernize the game, you know, sooner. And they're very resistant to that. I read something today about the former Padres owner was really the one who rallied a bunch of the other owners that was going to keep this team in Oakland, that they were really pushing against them moving to Vegas while the Padres owner was there. But since, you know, since his passing, you know, now Rob Manfred has gotten the votes to kind of move this. So yeah, it's an interesting kind of good old boys network when they get in there and what they're going to do and how they're going to move it. I mean, I've long felt that Vegas needs a baseball team. I agree. But another market like Nashville, to me, baseball's end game, a lot of people have talked about it, was getting to 32 teams like the NFL, like the NHL. It's a different split, you know, of a 16 and 16 versus the uneven, you know, unevenness of some of the divisions and stuff before. But, you know, Vegas is obviously an up-and-coming market. It's got a football team, got a really successful hockey team. Nashville has been just an explosion as far as people moving to Nashville and their support for the Predators and the Titans and stuff like that. So I felt baseball wants to go to these two markets, but expansion is, I think, really what the owners want because, hey, this is it's a $2 billion entrance fee that's split amongst the other 30 owners that they would want versus, hey, I'm just relocating this team from somewhere else. I'm curious on why the other owners are wanting to move out of Oakland and not let some expansion go elsewhere. But that being said, to my other point, can a baseball afford to do 32 teams right now? Because you've got these poverty-stricken teams at the bottom of the league, like the White Sox, the A's, and even the Angels, who Artie Moreno put that team up for sale, and no one seemingly was interested because they got a stadium that's old as heck that, you know, potentially needs a new one, and there's a lot of not great things about being the second team in quote-unquote Los Angeles.
I went to a lot of Angels games. The one thing I liked about them was they had a nice 24-ounce beers for $8. And in college, 24-ounce beers, ice cold for $8. Tailgate, knock down a 12-pack, go in there, put on a fake Boston accent, get kicked out after another four beers. Great experience. And I definitely love that.
I mean, yeah, I'm a fan of going to Angel Stadium, but it is older. But I mean, they're another franchise. I think investment in the team beyond just payroll, because the Angels have had some notoriously terrible contracts, but, you know, facilities investment, you know, things in the scouting department investing, like those are where things that you're not seeing on a day-to-day basis pay up for an organization. Like, these are the teams that don't bring up any, you know, decent minor leaguer that makes anything of themselves. They're just bringing up young guys, they're a bust, and move on to the next.
Yeah, they get lucky drafting. Yeah, with Artie Moreno, I mean, he tried, and like Jason said, they got bad contracts. Got Albert Pujols when he was washed up.
Well,
Josh Hamilton from Texas on his end of his career.
That was bad.
They had Trout. They had Ohtani.
The Rendon contract has got to be the worst contract of all time.
Like Rendon has quit. He's just quit. Yeah. I would designate him for assignment ASAP. He looked so good with the Nationals when they came and won a World Series, and then he comes to the Angels, and I don't even think he's played 100 games since he's been an Angel.
No, and he wants to work less. I mean, he's like, yeah, the season should be shorter, but I should make the same amount, but the season should be shorter.
Yeah, I even saw when Rendon's like, you know, this baseball's not even a career, it's just a job, it's something he does, has to show up and do to get a paycheck. You don't want to be paying a guy whatever. What are they paying, like $220 million, $240, whatever it is. But, yeah, Angel Stadium's old, but, you know, me and Rome, we used to go there, get those brewskis, get those beers, get those good deals going there. Yeah. They are starting to build a lot of infrastructure around the stadium. They're upgrading. They're going to start building apartments. I'm down there in construction industry, so I see what's going on. They're going to be building restaurants, apartments, living and stuff. You got that train place they put in there. So they're starting to upgrade around there, and then you're going to see
a train station.
Yeah,
a train place.
Okay. Yeah. So they are upgrading around their facilities. Whether or not they start upgrading, renovating that stadium and build a new stadium, we'll see. But
train place.
Yeah, Anthony Rendon, 7-year, $245 million, $35 million annually.
He's basically getting $1 million per game he plays per year, because that's about all he plays is 35 games.
So enough of the bad baseball. Rome and I will probably talk more of that on Monday. We'll see when the White Sox break the single-season loss record. Probably do Friday, Saturday, or Sunday night in Detroit. And then move on to some better baseball here in October where some actually well-run organizations that treat their fans well and invest.
Any indeed, last comments?
Indeed, man. I mean, you guys do the Monday show. Hopefully you guys are talking about the Braves getting in there as that last team in the wild card. Let's go.
I can't stand the Braves. I hope not.
It would give me an interesting opportunity if they're in the playoffs, Aaron, since I will be recording from Georgia here next week if Atlanta's in the playoffs. I don't know.
They get down. They get down playoff baseball in Atlanta, man. No doubt about it.
I could be a live correspondent for some Braves baseball. Although I don't know if you want me there. You brought me to a Braves game earlier this year, and that did not go well.
It did not. But hey, you know, maybe we got the bad luck out of the way. Get you that West Coast mojo. Go to back East, and things will go better.
You know, I wouldn't mind just walking by the dugout and just like hitting a few kneecaps, you know, making sure they don't make the playoffs, you know, stay injured, stay out.
The Braves already got a ton of injuries. They already lost a ton of kneecap guys.
Yeah. We'll see how it turns out. There's a few last playoff spots up for grabs. I'm excited to do an extended podcast on that. That's a funny segment, man. That's fucking grandma love listening to that.
It's still going, man. You haven't hit the stop or leave or whatever
really?
Button it is. Yeah, it's still going.
Son
the timer.
Of a bitch.